everyone. Welcome back to Truth or Demons podcast. I'm your host, Stevie. And I have to start this episode out with an apology to the fans and to today's guest. I got so overwhelmed by my day job and life the last few months that the podcast was inadvertently put on hold. I did this interview a few months ago, and I am so sincerely sorry it took me so long to get it out to you guys. A lot of factors were involved. My day job was busier than ever, and I took on a really massive, really important project for a friend and fellow podcaster, which, by the way, came out so good. I am currently making a video of the process and results. I completely disassembled a 1980s wedding dress and made a new modern party dress from the pieces. And the bride was stunning in it. I'm so grateful to Morgan for trusting me with that special project. So anyways, work has finally slowed back down to a normal pace for me. My side projects are mostly caught up, and I'm putting a big effort into bringing this podcast back to the forefront of my extra time and attention. I have so much in store for you all, including finally figuring out exactly how I wanted to do videos for YouTube. So, if you're watching on YouTube now, this is how the interviews will be from now on. And I will go back and redo all old interviews to be more engaging for YouTube viewers. And my next main episode will be the debut of my official YouTube video episode format. I'm so excited for these. Okay, enough updates. I won't keep you all waiting on this guest any longer than I already have. Okay, so today I sit down with a man named Brian McCauley. He has some ties to Nesper and the Warrens, and also some really fun and creepy things to share with us all. Okay, no more delays. Please enjoy the interview. Alrighty, if you would please tell the listeners who you are and a little bit about you.
Yeah, my name is Brian McCauley. I've been involved in the paranormal field for 23 years. I started on this journey when, I guess my first paranormal experience was when I was 10 years old, making my Holy Communion in the back pew. I saw my deceased great-grandfather, and being that age, I was confused as to why I would be seeing him, because you have this belief that there's heaven and all that. So that prompted everything, my questions as to like what happens when we pass, what happens on the other side. And I also grew up in a haunted house. So that all started. My dad used to take us to like haunted cemeteries and local haunted houses by our house. So I've been doing this probably since in my teenage years. That's when I started like a local ghost hunting group with friends. We used to go to the abandoned houses, the abandoned like psychiatric hospitals in our local town, and not necessarily doing it legally. That's where it all started. Having all those different experiences, I just questioned the unknown, and to this day, I'm still doing it and looking for answers and finding out what happens when we pass to the other side.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. And I'm noticing a little bit of a pattern with a lot of the paranormal enthusiasts and investigators I've been speaking to, where a lot of us have grown up with experiences in our own homes or very close to us.
Yeah, the house I grew up in wasn't like an old house. It was a new build. One of the wars passed through our property, and of course, when we were younger, I don't know if you remember the show or if you guys even had it, the show Sightings.
Yes, I loved that show.
So, funny story is, when I was, I think I was 10 years old still, I was watching Sightings on Christmas Eve. There was like a Christmas Eve marathon, and one of the segments was the Ouija board. And I watched it and like how all this terrible stuff happened, but foreshadowing, Christmas morning, I woke up and I had a Ouija board as a Christmas gift. My mom thought it would be funny to get a Ouija board. So
heck yeah.
Yeah. So that's where my mom swears that's where everything stemmed from, having the Ouija
board. Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't believe in that. I think it's like the intent you put into it is what you get out of.
Okay, I can agree with that for sure. I have several Ouija boards. I've played them in the past. I don't play in my own home just because I don't want to test anything. I don't ever fully believe in any one thing, but I am at least respectful enough to be cautious.
Yeah, I mean, being a paranormal investigator, you always get some case linked to the Ouija board. But going back to my house, it wasn't anything crazy. It was like your typical, like you hear footsteps at night, you hear someone walking through the hallway, and then it developed into like when you're in the bathroom, the door handle rattling,
Yeah.
hearing knocks, hearing voices. One of the craziest things that happened in my house was my sis. So, in when you enter our house, it's the walkway. You go to the right, you go upstairs. You go to the left, it's the computer room where you sit, and it's like a sitting room with a computer and all that. So, at the time, I was out at my then girlfriend's house, and when I came in, my sister said to me, "Wait, you just got home?" And I said, "Yeah, why? What's up?" She goes, "I just had like a half hour conversation with you. You were sitting on the stairs in your boxers."
Oh
I
my
said,
gosh.
that wasn't me. I just got home." And then she was hysterical crying.
Oh wow. Okay,
Yes.
so your opinion on that, I've heard stories like this, and some people telling the stories believe it was a time slip, and some people believe that it was a ghost portraying themselves as you. What do you think?
Yeah, so I know both those theories, but I think it was the spirit in the house portraying me, because I had a similar experience where I was sleeping and my door barged open and I saw my brother and he said, "What are you doing? Come downstairs." So I got up, got out of bed, went downstairs. I said to my mom, like, "Where's Jay at?" And she goes, "What are you talking about? Jay's not here." I said, "What are you talking about? He just woke me up saying, come downstairs."
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so whatever was in our house like to mimic us. It wasn't demonic.
Okay.
Like I know a lot of people believe that like the demonic will take on a presence of family, but in true demonic nature, they can't take full form. There's always something off.
Okay. So you think this was just a spirit or a ghost, having fun or being curious?
Yeah, I don't know if it was one of the spirits in our house was this little boy named Steven who was particularly attracted to my younger sister. And we did like EVP sessions. I know you're not supposed to, but we did EVP sessions in the house. This is all when we were younger where I didn't know like the rules of like what you should do, what you shouldn't do in your house. And in the EVP recording, the guy asked, "What's your name? What do you want?" And on the name, we had a little boy say, "Steven." I said, "Oh, well, Steven, what do you want to do?" And it said to me, "You dick, leave." And I was like, that's interesting." But the kicker to the story is on my TV in my bedroom, on the corner of the screen, there was the word dick written on my computer, on my TV screen.
Oh,
That was him. I think he
wow.
was a
Okay.
mischievous child
Yeah.
spirit.
If you had to guess an age, what would you guess his age to be?
I'd say probably 10, 11.
Okay.
Because we've seen him in the house. Me and my sisters have both seen him in the house.
That's awesome.
And
I
to
love
this.
a good like a corroboration to a story, like having someone else there to witness it with you.
Yeah. So we still talk about it to this day. Like, I still make jokes. Like, is Steven with you? Is he still here? Our childhood home is now my brother's house, and it's funny because now that he lives there, it's quiet. Nothing's ever happened. They haven't experienced anything.
Interesting. So my grandparents' house is kind of like that. Whenever my mom is there, it's very active. And then when she's not there, or if it's just my grandparents, there's nothing that my grandparents swear up and down it's not haunted. So my assumption is they haven't experienced anything that they could, deem in that direction. They just, probably if they do experience things, it's probably stuff they can easily explain away. But when my mom comes, it's like growls, the water turning off and on in the bathroom, the doors opening, like latch doors unlatching and opening, and it gets wild when my mom comes.
Now, does your mom like have any type of abilities? Like, is she sensitive?
I believe she is. She herself doesn't it she doesn't not think she is, but she's not really sure how to control it or make use of it. It just happens to her.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. Like, that's the way I perceive my abilities, I guess, because it just happens when it happens. I don't know how to My buddy is a psychic medium, and he tells me, he's like, you need to practice it. And I have two young kids. I work full time. It's like I have no time to do this. And he's like, there's no excuse. I'm the same way. I have two kids. He's in law enforcement. I'm like, I know. I'm just making excuses because I'm lazy.
Same. I have books and I have wanted to learn more and practice things to try and, because I'm not sure I have any abilities. I've never experienced anything like my mom, but I do have a book that says if you practice, you can ignite or hone in abilities like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of psychic medium people say, like, or even all the books I've read on the subject, they say everyone's born with it. It's just whether you develop it or not.
Yeah, and some have a more innate talent for it. Like if you're, really good at drawing or something, and the next person isn't, everybody can do it. Some just need more practice than others.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I feel how it is with like haunted locations. Because you go on like some of these most notorious places. Like, I've been to Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia more than I can count. And if I'm with one group of people, it could be the most quiet, boring thing you've ever done. Or if you're with another group of people where more people are intuitive and like push the envelope, shit happens. Like, you'll get activity. So I think it's all about who you surround yourself with and what intentions you have while you're out there.
I agree with that completely. So now that I can assume you are a believer, are you a religious-based believer?
That's a funny story. So, yes and no, I guess. Well, I guess yes in a sense. I started off with a group that was just your run-of-the-mill paranormal investigators. And then out of nowhere, we teamed up with this team from Pennsylvania. And they were religious and took on religious type cases. And they pushed a case to us from a case in Middletown, New York, where this woman was saying she was being actually sexually attacked by a demonic entity. And that was new to me. I said, oh. So that's is it. I said, let's go check it out, see what we could do. And my partner that I used to do paranormal investigations with at the time, he was very super Roman Catholic religious, so he had all the prayers out and everything. And I know you're not supposed to go into these type of investigations without being like in a state of grace and all that. So I went through all like the Catholic motions, like I made confession, make sure like my sins were absolved, and I just wanted to make sure I had a clean slate if I'm actually dealing with a true demonic case.
Yeah, for sure.
So we get to this house up in Middletown, New York, and we stop at their local, like a gas station food stop type place. It was like right around the corner from, she lived in a trailer home. So when we get there's this back field, and I shit you not, there was a field completely covered in crows. There's like
Whoa.
hundreds of black crows. And through all my research and everything, I said, well, that's usually like, I know like old school Italians say when there's black birds, that's the sign the devil is here. And then Native Americans, like, that's the sign the devil's here. So I was like, wow, we might actually be dealing with something pretty crazy here. So that was like my first instinct, like this is gonna be an interesting case. So we show up to the trailer. This woman, she was probably like maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. She brings us through the tour, tells us everything going on. She shows us pictures where she has like these bruises all over her bodies where you could see like fingerprints on her arms, on her thighs. And she says, you're gonna think I'm crazy, but this is like I've had the most intense sexual things happen to me from this entity. And she blamed it on a neighbor somewhere within the trailer park saying that they summoned this demon to go after her. She said they practice black magic. And I think it was something where she was like with this guy, and then this guy started dating this girl, and it got like this messy thing. And she said this guy was still obsessed with her. But anyway, going back to that, One of the things we had like Poland Spring water bottles, and one of them was filled with holy water. So we offered her a drink, and she grabbed the wrong one. She grabbed the water bottle that had holy water, and when she drank it, she spit it out immediately and said, "What the fuck? This burns." And then that's when shit hit the fan. Like she started gnarling. It was like right out of a horror movie. And I just look
Wow.
and I'm like, it's me and four other investigators. And the first thing in my head is like, someone's gonna call the police. There's four guys in this trailer with this woman who's screaming, gnarling, like growling. It reminded me of like a cheesy like B horror movie, like Exorcist movie that you see.
Dang.
So all this stuff starts happening. We start doing prayers, and they ask, because I'm the bigger one out of the group, so they asked me to like hold her to the we were on the ground actually, so I was restraining her because she was actually trying to like physically bite us and scratch us.
Wow.
I'm a 240-pound guy. This woman who's like 90 pounds soaking wet lifted me off the ground like I was nothing.
Jeez.
So that was my first experience with a quote unquote demonic type possession. As this was all going on, like she finally calmed down through the prayers and everything that we've done. And the weird thing was, like, out of the four of us, me and my partner felt like it was like a calmness came over us. Like he said the prayers he got, he just said like something told him these are what he needed to do, and it turned into like a calling almost. So we started reaching out to local people, and I don't know how I came across it, but this is how my tie to the Warrens started.
Okay.
I reached out to Ralph Sarchi. I don't know if you've ever heard his name
I
from
heard
your
it first
research.
time from you, so it's definitely someone I'll be looking into.
Yeah, so Ralph Sarchi is a retired New York City cop. He worked with the Warrens. It was probably like the early 90s.
Okay.
If you talk to him, he is extremely knowledgeable on the demonic and demonic hauntings and what you need to do. So I reached out to him because I read his book, Deliver Us from Evil. That's how I got in contact with him.
Yeah, okay. So I just got that book on Audible and started it. I didn't realize I didn't put the name together. That is the author. Okay, yeah. I'm reading
Yeah, so
that right
that's yeah, so Deliver Us from Evil is actually Ralph's book on cases he's done throughout New York and whatnot. So I reached out to him, I told him the whole story, and the first thing he goes, like, "Are you serious? You shouldn't mess with this stuff. Like, this woman could," which I totally agree, "this woman could have like a mental disorder and you can make
Yeah.
things worse."
Yeah, a lot of
So
that
I
gets
got
overlooked a lot.
Yeah, me personally, I feel a lot of these, like, quote, demonic type possessions are mental disorders.
I can
I
agree
think
with
they're
that.
undiagnosed, which a lot of people, like, if you're truly supposed to go through it, you're supposed to get, like, a psych eval and get cleared before you even start any of this stuff. And most
Right.
people are hes that's where you get the red flags, because when you bring that up, the person who's usually under any type of influence to it is kind of hesitant to do it. And if they're afraid to do it, that's usually a red flag for me. I
I
think
can agree with
they end
that.
up, I like to me, not to be an asshole, but I feel like you're full of shit. If you won't cooperate with the protocols, I'm not going to waste my time.
Right. If you were truly in need of assistance and help, you would do whatever it took to get that help.
Exactly. Yes. So that sparked a conversation with me starting to get involved with Ralph. And we got to talking a lot on the phone. And then it turned into like, "I have a type of possession case up in Long Island. Do you want to come and assist me with it?" So I said, "Yeah, sure." So I took the trip out to Long Island. It was this private home. I actually met my he ended up being a co star with me on our show, The Demon Files, my buddy Sean Austin. That was the first time I met him, and we went to this house, and me and Sean saw a lot of similar things. To me personally, I don't think the guy was possessed by anything, but there was definitely some dark energy there because we actually saw like a black spirit energy in the basement where this was all taking place.
Okay.
So after that happened, we went out. We went to like a local diner and started talking and got to know Ralph more and his partner Mark. And he would always talk about Ed and Lorraine and stories. Like it almost felt like I was in kind of like brought back to like times he felt like, 'cause it's almost like a full circle type thing. Like he's showing me how he was with Ed and Lorraine, and now I'm reliving it through him. He would talk
Nice.
stories like after every type of investigation always ended at some type of place to get food afterward. Like you're
I have
starving.
read that repeatedly and heard that repeatedly. Ed loved food.
Yes. Yeah. Anything. Yeah, exactly. Anything you read, it always ends with food. And Ralph would, I still see it to this day. Ralph would say, like, Ed would order these big like Reuben sandwiches and he would take a bite and say like, "Hey kid, you want a bite?" And it's funny, like you hear Ed's voice through that.
That's amazing. Yeah, Ed's
Yeah.
voice is very ingrained in my mind now from all the things I've watched and all and read, and I know like when I read something, I hear Ed's voice.
Yeah, you can't read anything without not hearing his voice. He definitely had that distinctive voice.
Yes.
So that's where like my start to getting tied to the Warrens happened, because everything I've learned through Ralph is obviously knowledge he received through the Warrens. And when you talk to Ralph, he would always joke and say like he was part of the A team and everyone else was part of the B team, that like he was Ed's right hand man.
Yeah.
And it's funny because how he found the Warrens, he was reading The Haunting, what book was it? One of their books, The Haunted, or, and I said, well, that's funny because that's how I got to reach out to you because I read your book. So it's like it came around full circle.
That's amazing. I love it. That would be considered a synchronicity, and I love synchronicities.
Yeah. And then it turned into I was working with him for a few years, pretty much vetting a lot of cases, because you know nowadays everybody thinks everything's a demon. So
Yes.
any case that Ralph would get, he would filter to me and other people in the team and say, "See if this person's legit or not. You'll know." So
And how would
that's what
you?
we.
When you would vet someone, how would you go about it?
So he would give us the contact, their phone number, and I would give them a call, and you kind of build like relationships with these people. Some of the people actually ended up being on our show when we went out and filmed The Demon Files.
Okay.
People that I've interviewed, they were definitely not demonic hauntings. I felt so bad. There was this one woman, she was in like the deep south. And she would call me all hours and even like 3, 4 in the morning. And she would just say things like, "The devil's after me. I've been sick to my stomach, throwing up, and I try to rebuke him, but he just keeps coming." I'm like, that's not demonic. You're having like a stomach bug or something.
Yeah, and maybe anxiety even from your stress over it.
Yeah, and she's like, "Well, he's holding me down. I can't do this specific task. It's the devil." I said, "It's not the devil." I said, so I go back to Ralph. I said, "Definitely cross that one off. This is not anything that's like time. Like we need to get there."
Yeah. We have a church here locally, I was told, in the Nashville area, where there's a woman who leads the church, and she is the type that will tell you everything is a demon. Your vice for smoking, your upset stomach, your headache, Everything is a demon and she can exorcise it out of you. And I feel like that's a deep South thing. Like a lot of,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, we have a lot of that here, and the people that follow it and believe it wholeheartedly, that's where a lot of that stems from, I think, is they don't know better. And because they're being told this and not anything else, that's where they go to first. It's a demon.
Of course, that's huge. I think it's more of a scare tactic to get you to confide and to give
Agreed.
your resources to the church, and people are gullible and they'll do it.
Yes, people want their salvation and to know that they have a place waiting for them. And some people will do anything to make sure that's secured for them.
Oh yeah, 100%. That was a I know you're in Tennessee. Our first case that we flew out to for Demon Files was in Wartrace, Tennessee.
Oh, nice. I know where War Trace is.
Yeah, so we were in Wartrace for about a week on this location. It was a family, beautiful house. It was gorgeous. But it was I can't remember off the top of my head. There was some like gangster that owned it before
Oh,
like way
wow.
back in the day, and there was like hidden compartments in their house. Like there was like doors that would drop to nowhere, or there was like a door that would like bring you downstairs that would give you to the basement, which would put you outside. Because
I love
apparently
that.
the person who built the house, I guess, was paranoid and wanted all these escape routes. And
Amazing.
their house, they had a It was like a trifecta. They had these huge power lines in the back. They had natural running water. There was a railroad station across. Not a railroad station, but train tracks.
Okay.
And it was just like when you had all those things, like it was built on ley lines, so this was like a
Oh,
paranormal
wow.
it was like a paranormal hot pot.
Yeah. We also have a lot of limestone in Tennessee, and a lot of paranormal researchers, investigators believe that limestone is also kind of one of those conductors of paranormal activity.
Yeah, they say I know limestone, like the stone tape theory and all that. It holds memories. People believe it holds memories, or it could cause like residual hauntings. But this house in particular, their youngest daughter was being attacked by an entity she said had yellow eyes, and she would get scratched. She was in a shower, and there was like scratch marks coming down her back. And the family, the mother said she got pushed down the stairs, like all this crazy stuff that was happening. So when we arrived to the house, we surveyed the land, like the EMF was like off the chart. It was crazy with high spikes all over the property. The funny thing is they had a black goat, a black horned goat when we got there. And I was like, wow, isn't this ironic? We're here in the beginning, and here's like Black Phillip is here with us.
A little baby Baphomet.
Yes, but sweetest, they had a farm. They had pigs, horses. It was this gorgeous. I was obsessed. They were actually selling the house. I wish I had the money to buy it.
Oh my goodness, right?
Yeah, but they had they also said that there was ghosts of I always get the wars confused. Was it the Civil War that went through there,
Yes,
Revolutionary? The
we
Civil
have a
War.
lot of Civil War stuff.
Yeah, and they were right by, I forgot what state park. We actually went there and snuck in there overnight to do investigations where the Trail of Tears went through.
Oh yes. There's so many areas in Tennessee, like I get confused on what's what and where and
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but we definitely had experiences with Civil War soldiers. They said they saw Civil War soldiers in their house. So when we get there, we go through, we hear all the claims. Like I said, they had people getting scratched. People were afraid to go upstairs. And I was the tech guy, so I had all of our equipment out there. I brought REM pods and the static cameras set up around the perimeter. I had laser grid lights, like all the stuff you see on TV. And as soon as I set up the REM pod, it was going off like crazy. And I had that thing for probably about a year, and it hardly ever worked for me. So when I saw that going off, I said, wow, something must really be here because this is crazy. And Ralph went up there and he goes, "What is this thing?" So I explained to him that's a REM pod, that it lets off an electromagnetic charge for spirits to kind of gather energy off of and communicate with. And the closer it gets, the more the lights light up. And he was doing something and it was beeping, like it was talking almost. And he said something and it sounded like it beeped like "fuck you" to him. And he's like, "All right." He's like, "Are you telling me fuck you?" He's like, "Oh, fuck you too." And that was the first time I've ever seen that. And I was like, "Oh, that's pretty wild. So we got some good stuff going on here." And the cameras weren't even rolling yet, because we were just setting up, getting ready.
That's great.
Yeah, it was the house was demonically possessed. I'm not sure. I didn't experience anything demonic. The one
Okay.
thing I thought, I'm actually not really a believer in orbs as paranormal evidence.
Yeah, I have a hard time with orbs.
That's how I feel, because everything's an orb. So
Yeah.
what I wanted to prove on the show, because a lot of shows don't do this, so I was thinking outside of the box, was to disprove like what orbs was. So I took like their pillows and like fluffed the room so you could see the dust. And I said,
Yeah.
"This is your ghost that you're seeing. It's just dust particles or it's bugs." But what ended up happening, we had a laser grid set up in their one bedroom that was completely active. And while reviewing the evidence, we noticed in the bottom frame where this chair was, there was this little bead of light that started manifesting. And I was like, "What the hell is that?" And you saw it go up the door frame, and as it was going, it kept growing bigger and bigger till it illuminated to like the size of a softball, and it swooped
Wow.
up to where the camera was and then disappeared. And I said, "I'm not a believer in this," but I said, "But if I was to ever say like an orb as evidence," I said, "that's the best thing I've ever seen." So I've
Right?
never
Like
seen it, because it physically grew and
I was gonna
illuminated
say,
light.
did you see it in real time?
No, we didn't see it, and that's what the kicker was.
Oh, okay, so you saw it on the camera, but you didn't see it in real time.
Yeah, we didn't see it. This was even during evidence review. Like nothing happened.
Wow.
No one was in the room while it happened. But
Okay.
even when we were like watching the monitors to see if anything was going on, we didn't catch it during that time either.
That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah, so that was one piece of evidence that I was like, "This is wild." But when it came to on the show, there is always a segment where Ralph would do religious provocation to try to bring out whatever's in the house, if it is demonic, to see if it will react to, like, we would play like religious prayers and like Catholic music, but nothing ever happened. We would
Okay.
wait. We would always specifically do it to like the devil's hour at 3 a.m.
Okay.
We would wait, but nothing ever happened. But the kicker and the crazy thing was, like, at the end of the show, if we feel like a house blessing exorcism was needed, we would do it. And Ralph would perform the rite of exorcism of the property, and we'd go through the whole spiel. So we did it to this house in Tennessee. And when we flew to Missouri, we got a phone call from the mother saying that the person who owned the house before them showed up at the foot of their property, like screaming, "What did you do? It's back at me." And this lady had like a mental break and ended up going to a mental asylum. They think that
Wow.
whatever was there went back to the original host, almost like how when Jesus exorcised the demons to the pigs to be slaughtered, it was like kind of like that type deal.
Like a transfer.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Wow, okay.
that didn't happen on the show. That was like behind the scenes.
Okay.
And that was just like an interesting thing. I was like, "Well, nothing happened there, but obviously something must have been there if it went back to the original owner."
Yeah, that is interesting. And if they're, telling the truth and serious about it, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like you thought you left the, place where it was happening and you're good now, and then all of a sudden it's back at you.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. And then we didn't hear anything after. We just heard that she got carted off and she went to like a mental asylum to get evaluated.
Interesting.
When I go to cases, I try to debunk as much as possible. I do not go to anywhere saying, right away, like, oh, your house is haunted. I'll go in, I'll say like the one person, I get up every night at this time because I hear things. Well, you bring out your EMF meter and you find out that the alarm clock next to them is skyrocketing. You're sensitive to EMF. Why don't you move your alarm clock and see if you sleep better?
Interesting. I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I try to do things. I'm not like scientific or anything, but like I try to look at it as like a logical explanation, or like you hear like someone's my floorboards creak. Well, maybe you have a air pocket underneath. You should check that out before you go claiming it's a spirit.
Yeah, and I appreciate that kind of investigation because that's how these cases and these stories get so outrageous, is because they'll get someone that comes in and instead of investigating, they just amp these people up and confirm what they're already thinking, and then you have this wild story.
Yeah, I've been on investigations where the people are so desperate to have paranormal activity that whatever I say, they just can't wrap their head around and won't agree with it. And then they'll go to another team. And the paranormal field is huge, but it's also small. Like, you know, a lot of people in it. There were cases where this one person, we went to her house, she said, like, she sees shadow people and all this stuff's happening. We find out she has cameras in every single room. She's trying to document everything. And as much as you debunk, she'll come back and say, no, I have a video. Look at this. And you'll say, that's nothing. That's just like your heat turned on, which caused your curtain to flutter. That's not paranormal. And then they get all pissed off at you, and then they'll call the next person. And it's funny, because a buddy of mine actually reached out to me. He goes, didn't you guys investigate? I said, don't even waste your time, dude. Don't even waste your time.
I've noticed that a lot in the groups that believe wholeheartedly without question. They do not want to hear any logic, any proof of debunking. It upsets them.
Yeah. There's a lot of people like that. And then a lot of people just want to be on TV. They find out, like, oh, you were on a TV show, and they get you to go there, and they like fabricate things. And it's like, sorry, you don't have anything going on here.
And that goes back to the Enfield case where the girls admitted to faking some of it, and their reasoning was so no one would lose interest in what was happening before they could get help. So I don't know if I believe that, but it seems like it would be a legitimate reason to fake something so you would be believed, because it's hard to be believed sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting case. I still like some of the photos you see, you're like, they're just jumping on the bed. Like, she didn't get thrown. But the other stuff, like, you don't know how true it is or not. Like, didn't they say the one daughter was like contorted into a box or something like that?
So there's a
If I
lot
can.
of stuff like that where they say this happened or that happened. I don't have any confirmation of that one. I have heard it before, but I didn't find any confirmation from the family themselves.
Yeah, that's. I thought something like that happened there.
Maybe it was not them. I get my facts confused too
I
if I
get them
don't have
all.
my
Yeah, I get them.
death in front of me. I do know that one of the most compelling parts of the Enfield case was when she spoke with the voice of the supposed deceased man, and then they
Yeah.
confirmed through that man's son that he did die that way in the home. That was really compelling. But I recently heard on another podcast that the man is actually buried very nearby in a cemetery. And I know as a child, I lived near a cemetery, like a couple blocks from a cemetery. It was in walking distance, and we went all the time as kids, to explore and stuff and be silly. And if we've, if we heard something in town, or if we knew something about a specific headstone and who the person was and stuff, we would perpetuate those stories amongst our friends. So that kind of debunks it a little bit for me, because I originally thought maybe they heard from like kids at school about the history, because kids will teach you it if they find out you're living in a specific house that had something go down and everybody knows about it and you don't and you move in, the kids will tease you about it and they will make sure you know to scare you or whatever. And so it makes me think that if the grave of Bill Wilkins was so close by, and the fact that they lived in this house that he died in, I feel like people knew he died there, and it could have been passed down from older siblings, parents, whatever, to this younger generation of children that Janet was in. And I feel like there is a good chance that they knew about the story.
Yeah, I could believe that. 'Cause there's definitely, if, especially if you're in like a local area to where it is, you could definitely feed off that story, and you don't know why kids would do that, but
Kids are
it's definitely
mean.
there.
And
Yeah. Yeah,
they're
I'm not
very
looking forward.
creative.
Yeah, I have my daughter, she says things like she watches, not that she should be, but like when she'll watch something that scares her, and she'll call me and say, "The smiley face man is at my window." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? This is like 4 in the morning." I said, "What'd you watch?" She goes, "Well, there was a story about a smiley man, and he knocks on the windows." I said, "Well, that's your own." I'm talking to her. She's 6 years old. But I'm like, "That's your subconscious, like projecting this out to scare you. That's not real."
That's fears manifesting.
Yeah. And I give her the whole ride. Like, she wants to go ghost hunting. I'm like, "You're 6 years old. We walk cemeteries and stuff, like our local, like we do the same thing. We walk our local cemeteries." I'm like, in my head, I'm like, "I shouldn't be doing this. She's so young." But she's interested in it and she loves it.
I have
And
several
it.
friends with kids in that age range, and they do the same. So I think you're good.
All right. It makes me feel a little better.
It's important to not keep things from children, to let them explore their curiosities and imagination. But also, like you said, make sure they understand the difference in imagination and, actual things happening.
Oh yeah, I explain in detail. I mean, she's very smart for her age. And it's funny, when she was little, from a thrift shop, she actually had a Raggedy Ann doll. And I said, "Oh yeah,
Oh, I
grow
love
little Annabelle." About the Annabelle. Oh jeez.
Since you brought up Annabelle, I love asking people
Yes.
now, do you believe in Annabelle as a haunted doll?
I've actually seen Annabelle in person numerous times. And do I actually believe in Annabelle? No. I think, no. That's like the cash cow right now.
I agree. That is 100% my idea as well. I believe that it is their money maker. The movies really helped too, and just the history of it, and of course the Warrens being attached to it, it's easy to perpetuate the story. But since you did get to go see her, can you tell me about your experiences there?
Yeah, so way back in the day, I'm sure you know the Warrens. Well, Ed was deceased by then, but they used to do the museum tours where they would sell tickets to go to Ed Lorraine's house, and you hear Lorraine talk, and they show some videos. And of course, Tony curated everything. And then at the end of the talk, you would go downstairs and you can explore their artifacts in the basement. You weren't allowed to touch anything, but you were allowed to take pictures and see all the haunted objects. And at that time, you didn't have to go outside and around the side door. You could actually go down where there's like this old hallway that had Ed's artwork, which was gorgeous. I love Ed's artwork.
It's pretty phenomenal.
And yeah, and then it's like this old hallway that you enter. And that's the other door, and you walk in, and then they have all the like the satanic idol and like all their obviously everything that's in the Warren's house. And they had a priest there who they claim blessed the objects weekly to keep them at bay. I don't believe like I do believe in haunted objects. You could have something, but like something like Annabelle, where you say is this most notorious haunted demonic doll. Do you really think a demon's gonna be stuck in a doll all these years?
Exactly. And not do anything if it has such power.
Yeah, you think it's gonna be held there, or even if it was invited into that doll, like we've talked in the past. How come the original people never stepped up with all of this hype and fame to get any type of
Right?
payment?
Right? I
Because
agree with that.
if that was me, I mean, it's money. I would want money for my story being told.
Same. And when we did, I did locate one of the Annabelle, I'm guessing it was the owner, the original woman who owned her, because then she had a roommate and then the man that lived there too. But the other two are deceased now from what I've found in records. But we contacted, and I say we because I have a group of people now that help me with research, and I didn't actually speak directly with her. It was one of my research team members, and he was in a
Yeah.
group she was in on Facebook, and that's how he got to communicate with her. But she didn't tell anything. All she did was basically admit she had that it was her doll, and then her line of so much is made up in Hollywood. And I'm just like, if you know that Hollywood made stuff up,
Yeah,
and
spill the
you,
tea.
yeah, tell us what's going on. Why aren't you trying to? Everybody is monetizing this situation. Why aren't you? So that was my
Yeah.
question. But she no longer communicated. We asked one more question and she did not reply, and that was the end of it.
Which is, doesn't it make you question things? Like, does she have like a non-disclosure, or she can't? Like, is
Right?
she getting paid to
I
not
wondered
say
that.
anything?
Yes. I wondered if she got any money. I wondered if she was friends of Ed and Lorraine and kind of helped with this story to start it off in the first place, because there's pictures of her with the doll in, you know, in the 70s in the newspaper written by the woman I interviewed who wrote that article. And
Yep.
then according to that woman, she didn't give the doll up to the Warrens right away. She took it back to them. So I mean, she did say that her memory was a little foggy and stuff, and it was, you know, forever ago. But it's weird to hear all these firsthand accounts to know that this woman existed, that, you know, she looks just like today. She looks just like that image in the newspaper. You can see the features of the woman's face, and it's almost undeniable that it's her. And so it just
Yeah.
makes me wonder what was going on? What all was behind the scenes? What all was put into this? The Warrens sought out Jill to write the article, so they did want to put it out there. And it's so interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I mean, to me, that's, if she's not responding, it seems like, is there like a non-disclosure there or something?
Yes, I agree. And I've wondered that with a lot of people I've reached out to speak to that I've found that won't reply. And I wonder if it's because they're under some kind of obligation like that.
Yeah. But going back to like how I met Annabelle and all that, but like my first time seeing her, like me now versus me way back in that day, like you're like a kid in the candy shop, like, oh, this is the infamous Annabelle job, like doll. I don't want to be like, I don't want to touch the case because you hear all these crazy things. So I'll send you the picture. Of course I took the like selfie with it and
Oh
all
yes,
that,
I'll put it. I'll put it up with the video, and then I'll put it on the Instagram.
and then the dinosaur from the haunting in Connecticut, Keith, the devil in Connecticut, like that, all that stuff.
Nice. I recently learned something about that dinosaur. I'm very excited to share in the next episode.
I'm looking forward to hearing that,
It's very fun.
I'm sure. But then after that, so they packed probably like 50 people in this house. And then after that, they bring you to like the local Italian thing where like you get to eat dinner and they like have Lorraine walk around. And at that time, Lorraine was actually with it. Like she actually spoke to you.
Yeah.
She had her wits about her. At the end of that, I didn't really agree with what they were doing with her. That was just wrong.
I've heard this from many people, and I have to agree.
And then they bring you to the cemetery where Ed's buried, and Tony would do the whole talk about Ed and how him and Lorraine met and all that, and the white lady of the cemetery.
So Ed is buried in Union. In the Union, what is that, Union Hill? Is that what the name of that cemetery is with the white lady?
Union Cemetery. No, he's not buried. I'm getting my things confused here. I'll have
No
to get
worries.
back to you. Was he
Excuse me.
buried?
That would be
He's
really interesting
buried.
if he was.
He's no, I think he's buried at start Sept Septony, or there's a cemetery where they did all their exorcisms were in this church. That's where he's buried. It's not Union Cemetery.
Oh, okay. So they just told you about that story. It was one of Ed's biggest stories too, the Union Cemetery haunting, the white lady.
Yeah, he's spent, from what I've heard about it, he would go there every night trying to get video of the lady in white, and he finally got it.
Wow. Yeah, I know
And
about
you
that
could YouTube
story.
it. I think it's on YouTube,
I have
like the
not seen
actual
the
his
video yet.
actual
Yeah.
video.
I need to look that up because I have not watched it yet, because I plan to include that in an episode soon.
Yeah, I saw it through Ralph because Ralph had the archive of it. That's what I liked
Okay.
about Ralph, because I had all the insider. Like, I have lectures from Father Malachi Martin, Bishop
Oh,
McKenna,
very
like all
cool.
these notorious exorcists. So learning from him is like I had the experience to get the knowledge from Father Malachi Martin and Bishop Robert McKenna.
That's really cool. So there is a lot of question about the priests that worked with the Warrens being legitimate exorcists and or, priests in general. So you know for sure, or you at least believe for sure that they were actual exorcists helping the Warrens?
Bishop McKenna and Father Malachi Martin, I believe in 100%.
That's
Those
awesome.
two, yeah, those two were unbelievable figures in that sense. If you haven't read, I highly recommend Hostage to the Devil, if you've never read that.
Okay, no, I haven't. I'll add that to my list of
That's
books. I
by Father Malachi Martin, which he is an incredible. If you don't know anything about him, you should really look into him. He was like an underground crusader, like questioning the Vatican and all this crazy
Oh,
stuff with what
wow.
goes on in the Vatican.
I will definitely look into him and maybe even do an episode on him. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, there was a series which Jimmy, who's part of Nesper, he actually help facilitate Hostage to the Devil. It was on Netflix a couple years ago. There's a
Okay.
documentary on Father Malachi Martin, and he's another, I mean, he is a controversial guy. You have some people that love him, some people that hate him.
That tends to be the way with anybody who puts themselves in the public eye.
Yeah.
I'm
But
definitely
that's
going to look
where
into him.
I got to see some of the behind the scenes of that when they were filming Hostage to the Devil. I get to It was made by I forgot his last name, but his first name was Marty. He's from Ireland, where Father McKenna, I mean Father Malachi Martin is from Ireland.
Oh, very good. I love Ireland.
Yeah, we talked about that. I love Ireland.
Yeah.
But that's where I first met Jimmy before actually going through Nesper.
Okay, so let's talk about Nesper now. What do you know about Nesper, and what are your feelings on the group?
Originally, probably like peak a little bit after COVID, the initial COVID. As you know, with Eric was part of Nesper during that time, and he's like, "You should come. They want you. You should come, like, join us and whatnot." And I was a little weary with doing it, just because like I worked with Ralph, and I know Ralph and Tony do not get along whatsoever. And
That's interesting.
if Ralph ever found out, which I don't know if he'd hear this, he'd probably bring me an asshole that I did a little bit. So he gave me Tony's number. Tony had me call him, and he was asking me, like, "Are you a religious person?" And at that time, years ago, I was like, "Yeah, I believe in Jesus. I've done everything, like I've done the work through like the Roman Catholic standpoint." And he's like, "Well, what makes you want to work with Nesper?" And I said, "Well, obviously, Ed and Lorraine are like the pioneers of the paranormal, and it would be an honor to work with them and like work with their legacy." So they invited me out to the Conjuring House in Harrisville, Rhode Island. And that's, I've known Dan for years before that. Like, I met him at that first time I went to the Warrens. I don't even know what they were calling it back in the day. The Dinner with Annabelle, I think they started calling it now. So I've
Okay.
known Dan. I've met Tony in the past, and Tony seemed like a nice guy. He was super friendly. He knows this Warren, like the history of the Warrens and all that. But me knowing now with like when I worked with Ralph, I know like Tony doesn't investigate. He never went on investigations, even when the Warrens were around.
Really?
That's from my knowledge that he
Gotcha.
never
Yeah.
actually physically went to investigations.
I've heard that. That's why I said really the way I did, because I've heard from other people that he doesn't participate really.
Yes, so when I went to the Conjuring House with them, I was going like they were bringing me on as like an associate to Nesper because they want to start this like if there's any cases in my area they could feed it to me and I'll handle it, but I would have to
Gotcha.
do it under like the Nesper guidelines and whatnot. And so we go to the Conjuring House, which I love the house. It's on gorgeous property. It's just like my dream house. It's just this beautiful old farmhouse, the old natural wood. Has nothing to do with the ghosts and whatnot. We go there and investigate. They do like a live YouTube stream on their Nesper channel, and Tony introduces me as the new member of Nesper, which is like, oh, cool. So I was all excited. And then we investigate. Nothing really happens while we're there. We go outside, do like some spirit box sessions, and it was just like a run-of-the-mill investigation. But when like little things start happening, it would be like, oh, this is a demon doing this and blah blah blah. In my head, I'm like, oh man, what am I getting into? So, like I said, nothing really goes on around like later in the night. Like there's some, what were we using? We were using like a portal box where you could hear the voices in real time. And they were start saying, and they're like, oh, that said Ed, that said Ed. Ed's coming through. And it was almost like you're just watching them fish for things.
And I've heard that before on investigations where they were all together and they start saying, "It's Ed, it's Ed."
Yeah. So then we break up into little groups and like we go investigate different areas. And I'm just hanging out with Eric talking. And a lot of things like they bring like crazy amounts of food in the kitchen is like all these deli meats to make sandwiches and then like Tony would make comments like, did Ralph feed you like this? I'm like, no, like we're investigating, not eating. This is it was
What's the
interesting.
priority here?
Yeah, I was like, it's a nice spread, thanks. But that's not really what I'm here to do. So food was like a big thing. They always talked about food. And then like I would go out and investigate and like try to experience things for myself. Because I've been to the house before this and we had some cool experiences there. But like I said, every location, I think like that house now is so saturated with people there all the time. Like it's just running dry. Like I don't think
And the
whatever's
current
there is like
owners being called out repeatedly for faking is not a good look either.
yeah, it's I haven't been there. I wouldn't The money that they want is ridiculous. It's
Agreed.
crazy.
I saw that. I made a post about it. I was utterly shocked. And then not only like do they have those that they have posted on the website, those prices. There are more fees that you learn about when you book, especially if you are a content creator.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to make money. I mean, when Corey and Jen ran it, like it wasn't anything like that. They were super friendly. You could tell they loved the house. They were paranormal investigators that just wanted people to experience the house. And like, of course, they were charging money too, but it wasn't anything like they're doing now. I think back then it was like, I think it was like 80 or 100 bucks a person if you wanted to go overnight. And now I heard it's like crazy money.
It's a well, so for just a normal person that's not like a content creator intending to do this for their content or their job, like an investigator, it's $960 for an overnight.
Per
And that's
person?
not, no, it's, so it's up to, I think it's up to 12 people,
You could
but
probably.
yeah, if you were a normal person, that would not be that out of the question if you had a large enough group. But if you are a content creator, it starts at $1,200. And if you bring another content creator, they have to pay themselves $850 on top of that $1,200.
Jeez.
So you can have multiple people if you're a content creator, but they can't also be content creators.
I wonder how that goes, 'cause obviously, Destination Fear got the boot, so now they're doing Project Fear on their own YouTube channel. I wonder if they made them pay that money, 'cause I saw that they're posting in February that they were at the Conjuring House and they're releasing it sometime in February.
I would imagine so, and I imagine that because there's also fees tacked on to like how much content, like if you have a Patreon, you have to pay more. If you have any subscription services for your content, you have to pay more. And I know
That's
that,
just, to me, that's just
yeah.
greedy. 'Cause
Oh, I
people
agree.
watch your stuff, they're gonna wanna go to your place. That's just greed.
And I feel like this kind of started because of how much some of these content creators make. Like if you look at Sam and Colby, for instance, they're huge. They have millions of followers and millions of views all day, every day. They make bank. They make so much money off of YouTube.
I'm
So
sure.
that would make sense, kind of, for them to be paying that much because they are using it to make more money. But like someone like me, like I don't have that big of a following. I'm very small. I do not make money on my show. It would be nice if that happened, but like I basically do it for fun. And like my sponsors that I have are friends, companies. I like, sharing and showing off what they do and sell so I can give them a little, But I'm not in a position to just fork over that kind of money. I'm a normal person and I work a normal job and it just seems like there's some sort of gap in their idea of how this business works where they can charge that much money because not everybody makes Sam and Colby money.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, what it comes down to at the end of the day is money. That's what it's all about. And especially with the movie and everything. And I mean, a lot of the claims, like I told you, I love the house. It's probably one of my favorite locations just because I love the house. But was it one of the most notoriously haunted houses I've ever stepped foot in? No. I've had more stuff happen to me more at the Hinsdale House up in New York. I don't know if you ever heard of that. My buddy Dan Kleiss owns it. That house is the moment you're not safe anywhere. You go to the property, I felt nauseous outside, inside. It was just overwhelming.
Oh, wow. I have not heard of that place. I'm gonna have to look into that.
Hinsdale, I mean, the Hinsdale House has been on TV shows. It's been on the most terrifying places. Nick Roth did Paranormal Lockdown there. The Warrens have history there.
Oh, very good. Then I can definitely do an episode on it. My problem is I probably heard of it, but I am terrible with names and remembering facts that go with specific things.
But that's where, so going back to the whole Nesper thing, that's where I got my feet in with Nesper and all that. And then, so I was all excited at that time. I was like, oh, I'm going to be working and learning more of what Ed and Lorraine's legacy was. So we get back, a few weeks go by, I'm texting or messaging with the guys, anything, do you have any cases or is there do you guys do meetings? Can I come up? 'Cause I'm in New Jersey, they're all in Connecticut. I said, I can come up for meetings. I want to be involved. How could I be involved? It was crickets.
Really?
It was interesting. So I messaged Tony and I said, Tony, I want to be involved. I want to do cases. I'm a seasoned investigator. I could help you guys with whatever. And this was all around that I told you the time The Devil in Connecticut was coming out. And he's like, well, the movie's coming out. Things will pick up. Things will pick up. And to me, in my head, I'm like, what does that have to do with cases? And do you guys do Like, do you guys do cases? Like, because from everything I've heard, like, even with Eric, they've rarely do any cases. And if they get a case, they just pass it off to someone else.
I heard
I
that
said, how
too,
you.
and I
I was
go
like,
ahead,
how
I'm
can you
sorry.
continue? Yeah, no, like, how can you continue a legacy if you're not willing to help people? Like, people are coming to you because they believe in
Exactly.
what the Warrens did, and you're just passing things off.
Yeah, and if you're supposed to be continuing what the Warrens wanted and that what they were doing, that was the meat and potatoes of their whole thing, was helping people.
Yeah. So I got a little discouraged and I said to Eric, I'm like, dude, what's going on? Like, why don't you guys do meetings? Like, and then like they had a house investigation when they did the investigation of the Warrens Museum. I was like, they didn't even ask me to come up. I thought I was a member of the team. Like, what's going on? So it was just radio silence. And then to me, I took that as a blessing in disguise because, like you, I started hearing things and researching things. And I lost a couple people I looked up to, like, majorly when they found out that I was going to do stuff with Nesper. And
Oh.
a big one of mine that really hit me hard was John Zaffis stopped talking to me. He just ghosted me. He deleted me off everything, and I was heartbroken. I was like, this is because I've known Johnny for years.
Yeah.
And now we're friends again. I told him, I was like, I have no ties whatsoever, and we're talking again. But I was like,
That's
that's a red
good.
I said, that's a red flag if like people stop associating with me because I have Nesper affiliates.
That is, yeah. I've not heard of anyone else say that before, and I can definitely see why Johnny felt the need to do that because of what I'm hearing. He doesn't want anything. He doesn't want to be involved at all with them. He doesn't want to hear about it. He doesn't want to see it. He doesn't want to be asked about it, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, I don't either. He got the shit end of the stick in my eyes. He should have inherited Nesper, I believe. Nesper would not be what it is if it was in Johnny's hands.
I'm going to have to agree with you. From all the research I've done the last year, all the people I've talked to, and the things that keep coming out as I continue the podcast, I'm just baffled by how Tony runs things and how it goes now. And a lot of fans of the Warrens feel the same. And they say it's sad that it's like I'm seeing a lot that the quote, Ed would roll over in his grave if he knew how Nespresso was being run right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you hear stories like they fabricate a lot of things and you question a lot of things. Like, I know I question a lot of things and a lot of different cases that I was really into. And I'm like, how much of this actually did happen and how much of it didn't happen?
Yep. And I'm
Like, the
really
stuff that.
excited. Oh, go ahead.
No, you can finish.
I was gonna say, I'm really excited to, like, you mentioned that house that you said was insanely active and you couldn't get away from it. I'm excited to know that the Warrens do have a tie to that because I really want to find some stuff to share with my audience that could be considered legitimate hauntings because so far I've just been debunking.
Yeah, the Hinsdale House is definitely one. I can I'll shoot you a text with Dan. I'm sure he would love to talk with you.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, he's the current owner and he's doing a great job. He's restoring it. Like, he's using it for the purpose of paranormal research. Like, you can rent it out, you can stay there, but all the money that is being put into, like, if you stay there, he's actually putting it into the house. Like, he's making it.
That's great.
Yeah, he's a good
I
guy.
love that. Oh, I would love to talk to him. Thank you for that possible introduction. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. But going back, like, yeah, like I said, the way things are now, like, even when you see Annabelle, on the case itself, it says positively do not open. And yet they're parading it around like it's nothing.
Yeah. And if you are a fan of the Warrens, you know how many times Lorraine said, "Don't look at it. I'm not going to look at it. Don't touch it. Don't move it."
like there are rules, and now those rules are completely disregarded.
That's what I saw. Now they're like parading multiple objects from the museum, and there's like their
Yes.
Paracom and the
They have a new
Paracom.
one.
No, the Seekers of the Warren, Seekers of the, now I think they're calling it the Phasmacon or whatever.
Yep. That has changed names a couple of times, but have you heard about the newest one, their road tour?
I actually saw, because I'm friends with Kelly, the owner of the Shanley Hotel, where they're going to be in March.
Yes. So the Devil on the Road tour, they're taking some items and that are supposedly haunted from the museum to parade around the country, and they're promoting and saying, you know, if you can't get to us, it's cool. We'll bring it to you. And then I did find something very funny. Dan, who's their quote
Yes, I
senior
know.
lead investigator, has announced that they will not be bringing Annabelle. And the way he's announced it makes you, it's almost like he's trying to confirm that Annabelle doesn't travel. We don't take Annabelle places, you know?
Meanwhile, you flew her to Las Vegas for Zach Bagans. You
Exactly,
bring
on
her
an
to your
airplane
own
full of people.
Paracom,
Yeah.
stuffed in a suitcase, because you know
Yep.
rubber gloves protect you from demonic entities.
Right. I'm cracking up over the memes popping up over the oven mitts.
Yes, you need those
Yeah.
to deal with her. You definitely need some type of hand protection.
Yeah, 'cause that will protect you from all things demonic.
I need to jump in and interject something here before we continue this interview. Brian is about to tell us about another haunted doll a lot of you, I'm sure, have heard of and know the story behind. If you don't, I'll link some info and more shows that discuss it below and in the show notes. But before we can continue with Brian's interview, I must ask, Robert the Doll, may we please have permission to talk about you and share some of your photos now? Thank you, Robert. Back to the interview.
It reminds me, I grew up going to Key West a lot as a younger kid, even to now. And
Oh,
I
yeah.
will, I'm sure you know about Robert the Doll.
Yep.
So that was my yearly tradition. I always had to go to the East Marcello Museum to see Robert the Doll because I love ghosts and paranormal. Like they do it the right way. Like you cannot touch him, you don't bring him out. He's just there on display. And him, I could believe in his stuff because if you look at that, he's more of a cursed object that was actually like a Haitian voodoo doll.
And it has a legitimate history with a very consistent progression of that history. You know, like the way they present it in the museum and the way it's talked about and the way other shows talk about it, like it has a very consistent
Yeah, nothing's
story.
changed over the years. It's not one word was changed in
Yep.
that entire history.
Yep, and the evidence, the Annabelle has the motorcycle crash. Robert has countless letters, countless stories of people saying this happened to me, I apologized, and things were better. Annabelle doesn't have that.
Yes, exactly. But my comparison is, they built up the museum. Like when you go there now, it hasn't completely changed, but where Robert is, it's like completely renovated and like they made it really beautiful. But what I'm trying to say is Robert is their cash cow. People go there for Robert the doll.
Yes, they do.
It's Annabelle is the cash cow.
Yep.
People hear the stories, they want to see her.
And if you hear older people talk about Annabelle from the area that know and have heard of her, they are very in fear of her because of the stories they were presented with and how she was handled then. She was kept in the museum then. She was, you know, Lorraine did tell people she's not to be messed with. So it's interesting now to see how she's mocked by people who visit her, like the younger generations.
Right, you got all these influencers and all these people. Like it is a
Yep.
complete mockery now. It
Yep.
totally demeans what she used to stand for.
Yep, I don't think there's an influencer in existence today that would willingly go mock Robert.
No. That's the difference between truth and fabrication.
Agreed, yes. All righty, before I let you go, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners about any of your experiences in hauntings with Nesper, with anybody in particular that you'd like people to hear about?
Like I said, I tried to do stuff with Nesper and nothing ever happened. We didn't do investigations. I didn't get invited on investigations. So I honestly don't know what Nesper is without what they're doing now.
I agree
It's funny
completely.
because clearly to me, it's sad and it seems like it's all about the money.
I agree. And I meant to tell you, I have heard from multiple sources that Tony doesn't even open emails anymore, that he doesn't even acknowledge requests for help anymore.
I mean, I could believe that. I mean, you look at things like I know there's a video circulating right now where Dan claims it's from like the early 90s. And
Yes.
yet you see my buddy Eric in there who wasn't even part of Nesper in the 90s.
I mean,
So
if it happened in the 90s, the Warrens would have been there.
That's my thoughts exactly. Is like where was Ed? Where was Lorraine? And why is
Yep,
it
I
just
s
solely Dan doing something? And I don't agree with the video because if you've seen the video, clearly to me, it looked like someone with disabilities.
Absolutely 100% agree, and I did speak to someone who thinks they can confirm that. I'm hoping to be able to confirm that because I am going to do an episode on this because I found it insanely ridiculous that it went up the way it did with the filter that it has on it, trying to allude to the fact that it's from that far back.
Yeah, I mean it's just sad, and
It is.
but I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with that one.
I will definitely keep you posted when it goes out. It's my next one.
Yeah, and same thing, like not about money, but yet if you see he's now making sweatshirts with his famous zero fucks given, he's now selling sweatshirts for it.
The amount of stuff I have prepared to address this just makes me giggle. I'm very excited to bring that up in its own episode.
Yeah, but like I said, you're doing great work. I mean, you do it very tastefully. There's no negative things. Like, you don't put a bad taste in the mouth for people who still like the Warrens. Like, I respect the Warrens. I expect their legacy. They did pioneer the paranormal.
100%. Yep.
It's just sad what it's turning into now.
I agree. And I appreciate that. Thank you. I try to keep a very neutral atmosphere in my show because I don't like the way, especially now with Nesper, the way they have to be so adamant and final about the things they say. That is not how it works. None of us, not a single one of us in the history of the world has the exact direct answers. It is all speculation. It always has been. And until there is proof otherwise, it always will be. So I want people to have all the information and be able to decide in their own sense of things, the way they feel, the way they perceive things, and the way they experience it. I don't want to influence anyone's beliefs. I just want everyone to have the opportunity to decide for themselves.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen. They're going to be with it, or they're going to be against it, or they don't care at all.
Exactly. And the people that get defensive crack me up the most because there is no reason to get defensive unless you have something tied.
Exactly. And there's a lot of people that you see it now with all the memes and everything going on, and all the people that are still, they put Nesper up to like this huge pedestal, and people are just they just can't see what's really going on there.
I agree completely. Awesome. Then I will make sure I link your social media and stuff in the show notes so that way if anyone has any questions for you. Also, I do intend to have my guests back for a Q&A should anybody want to ask you any questions, if you would be up for that, that would be great.
Yeah, definitely. I love your podcast.
Thank you. All righty then. I will let you go for now then, and once I get this all edited and ready to go, I'll let you know when it goes up.
All right. Thanks, Stevie. It was great talking with you.
Thank you so much to Brian for coming on the show. It was so much fun hearing your stories and firsthand accounts. And again, if you guys want me to have Brian back and ask him some of your questions, let me know. I'd love to have him back and see what you all can come up with for him. That also goes for all my guests. Leave me a comment below or shoot me a message on any social media or email me at truthordemonspodcast@gmail.com. And before I go, a couple more updates. More bonus episodes are in the works. Episode 6 about the Arnie Cheyenne Johnson case is almost done. I really went deep on this one. Also, I will be doing another giveaway, this time for a very special company called Lunar Key Candles, so definitely stay tuned for that. And one more thing. I love doing ad trades with other shows. I recently traded trailers with a show called Ouch, Was That a Ghost? And I'd like to play their trailer for you now. This show is so much fun. It's spooky, informative, and funny. Highly recommend. If you like my show, I think you'll love this one too. So, have a listen to the trailer and then head over to Ouch, Was That a Ghost? On any podcast platform and give them a listen and a follow.
If you like paranormal, true crime, and some cryptids, or just anything weird, check out Ouch, Was That a Ghost? Brought to you by your host, Liz. You can find Ouch, Was That a Ghost? On Spotify, Apple, or any audio platform. New episodes drop every Thursday.
Thanks again. If you enjoyed the show, please like or drop a comment. I try to answer all comments. And if you would, please hit that subscribe button. Until next time.